Hi everyone, welcome to Logical Bible Study. Our goal in this podcast is to help you understand the text of the Bible better by doing an exegesis of the text, really diving into the literal sense. And today's text is a really interesting one. We're going to see the genealogy of Jesus. So I'll start by reading the passage and then we'll have a look at it. Now this is one of these passages where I'm going to get a lot of the pronunciations wrong because it's a long list of Middle Eastern names. So I'll probably stuff up a few of the pronunciations, and it's worth going to Mass today just to hear your priest try and read through this list of names as well. Today we have Matthew chapter 1, verses 1 to 17, so we're right at the start of the Gospel of Matthew. A genealogy of Jesus Christ, son of David, son of Abraham. Abraham was the father of Isaac, Isaac the father of Jacob, Jacob the father of Judah and his brothers. Judah was the father of Perez and Zerah, Tamar being their mother. Perez was the father of Hezron, Hezron the father of Ram. Ram was the father of Amminadab, Amminadab the father of Nashon, Nashon the father of Salmon. Salmon was the father of Boaz, Rahab being his mother. Boaz was the father of Obed, Ruth being his mother. Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of King David. David was the father of Solomon, whose mother had been Uriah's wife. Solomon was the father of Rehoboam. Rehoboam was the father of Abijah. Abijah, the father of Asa. Asa was the father of Jehoshaphat. Jehoshaphat, the father of Joram. Joram, the father of Azariah. Azariah was the father of Jotham. Jotham was the father of Ahaz. Ahaz, the father of Hezekiah. Hezekiah was the father of Manasseh. Manasseh, the father of Amon. Amon, the father of Josiah. And Josiah was the father of Jeconiah and his brothers. Then the deportation to Babylon took place. After the deportation to Babylon, Jeconiah was the father of Shealtiel. Shealtiel, the father of Zerubbabel. Zerubbabel, the father of Abiud. Abiud, the father of Eliakim. Eliakim, the father of Azor. Azor was the father of Zadok. Zadok, the father of Achium. Achium, the father of Eliud. Eliud was the father of Eleazar. Eleazar, the father of Mathan. Mathan, the father of Jacob. And Jacob was the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Of her was born Jesus, who is called Christ. The sum of generations is therefore 14 from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the Babylonian deportation, and 14 from the Babylonian deportation to Christ. So that's the end of our very long reading today. Now, this is one of these passages right at the start of Matthew chapter 1, which I guess our exegesis is probably not going to be able to do it justice because there has been a lot written about this entire genealogy. Lots of scholars have spent a lot of time unpacking why Matthew includes these names in the particular order that they appear. And so there's actually a lot you could say about every single person that appears in this genealogy and why Matthew structures it the way he does. So there'll be some parts of this that we're going to go over pretty briefly, but our aim is to do a decent exegesis of most of the parts of today's text. So we start here with a long list of names which traces Jesus' lineage from David all the way to Christ. And we don't see genealogies in our culture as particularly important, but to the ancient people, genealogies are really important. They tell a story, a very important story. So when Matthew lists this genealogy, every time Matthew writes down a name and his audience would have read that name, they would have immediately recalled all of the events associated with that person. So Matthew here is actually retelling the story of Israel. And so it would have actually been quite exciting for his original readers to read this, particularly because it's depicted as this genealogy that reaches a crescendo in the person of Jesus, the Messiah, the one they have been waiting for. So there's a lot you could say about this whole story that Matthew is portraying here from David all the way to Christ. Now, whereas the Gospel of Luke goes all the way back to Adam in his genealogy, Matthew, if you read the first verse here, Matthew starts from David. In fact, he starts from Abraham, but the two key figures that this genealogy revolves around are David and Abraham. It doesn't mention Adam. Matthew doesn't go all the way back to Adam. And that makes sense given who his audience is. Remember, Matthew is writing to Jews. So Matthew wants to convince his Jewish audience that Jesus is the Messiah. So one of his main goals all the way through is to show how Jesus fits the description of the royal Messiah that they've been waiting for, particularly the royal Messiah as understood of being a descendant of King David. So that's why in this genealogy, he keeps relating it back to King David, because his Jewish audience in particular had this strong emphasis on the Messiah being a son of David. And of course, he keeps linking it back to Abraham as well, because he's the father of the Jews. So if we keep in mind Matthew's audience, it makes sense as to why he structured his genealogy the way that he does. So Matthew's genealogy goes right back until Abraham, and it was promised that through Abraham, all the nations of the earth would be blessed. That was something that Abraham was told very early on. So Matthew here, by emphasizing that Jesus is descended from Abraham, not only is he emphasizing that Jesus is the son of David, he's also the fulfillment of the promises to Abraham in that all the world will be blessed through Jesus. So it's actually quite amazing how Matthew is able to weave all of these subtle Jewish truths into his genealogy. Now in verse 1 here, our translation says, "This is the book of the genealogy," or sometimes the translation will just be "a genealogy of Jesus Christ." Now what it actually says there in Greek is really interesting. The phrase there in Greek is "biblos genesios," which we translate as "book of genealogy." But what that could actually be translated is as "book of beginnings," or even "book of Genesis," interestingly. So Matthew here starts his book of Matthew with "Biblos Genesios," which can be translated "book of Genesis." So Matthew here is also communicating that this is a new beginning for humanity. Through the Messiah, there is this new beginning for humanity coming about. It's a new book of Genesis. And he calls it a genealogy of Jesus Christ. So Matthew here uses the word Christ, which of course means Messiah. It's in the first verse here. Matthew tells his readers, this is a genealogy of Christ. So he's actually building excitement for his readers so that they actually want to keep reading. Ooh, this is the genealogy of Christ. And so then he sets out his genealogy, building right up to the person of Christ. So then he goes through that long genealogy, focusing on particularly David and Abraham, but he includes a whole list of names here. It goes on for 16 verses of names. And it's the basic formula is X is the father of Y, who is the father of Y. And it keeps going all the way down through most periods of Israelite history. So there's some periods there about the kings. There's some periods there about the exile after that. Although he does skip some time periods as well. Now, again, there's a lot you could say about each of the names you see on this genealogy, but we're going to skip over most of them. Although a lot of really good stuff has been said about scholars for this particular passage. So if you're interested, I recommend picking up a commentary for the Gospel of Matthew. One thing I want to draw your attention to, though, is throughout this genealogy, women are mentioned. Particularly early on, you would have heard a few women's names, like Ruth. She was in there. Now, that's pretty uncommon in a Jewish society which is male-dominated. Usually in the genealogies, you would only have men. There was no need to include women in there. So why does Matthew include women in his genealogy? He doesn't have to. The genealogy would be fine without it. So scholars have come up with some different theories about why Matthew might have included women, and any of these could be right. So one theory is that Matthew has included these women because they're sinners. Most of the four women which are included in this genealogy are sinners, and so perhaps Matthew has come to emphasize that Jesus is going to take away the sins of the world, and he has come for sinners. And these women are a good example of the kind of sinners that he's come for. It's probably not the best explanation because some of the men in the genealogy are sinners as well. And so it doesn't seem like the best explanation. You could do that without mentioning the women. A second theory, which is really interesting, is that all four of the women that he includes there seem to be associated with having some sort of irregular marriage or irregular union. If you go back and trace the stories of these women, they all had a strange sort of marriage. But it didn't disqualify any of them from being part of the royal lineage. And in fact, if they were the ancestors of David and Solomon, and some of these women were, for example, Ruth is an ancestor of David and Solomon, it doesn't disqualify David and Solomon from being God's chosen kings. So maybe Matthew has included that in here so that his readers are a little more prepared for the shocking union that he's about to describe between Joseph and Mary. So the point he's making here is, well, all through God's history of Israel, God has allowed there to be irregular unions, and he's allowed the king to come from that. So, and now he's eventually going to go on to describe the virgin birth, and perhaps this is a way of kind of lessening the shock of the virgin birth by showing actually God does allow irregular unions as part of his chosen line. So that's an interesting theory as well, and I think that makes good sense actually, given other things that Jesus says later in the gospel. The third theory would be that all four women who were chosen are non-Israelite. And so perhaps Matthew here is emphasizing that Jesus has come for all people, for Gentiles as well. Now, it's also worth mentioning, if you compare Matthew's genealogy here with Luke's genealogy, they are a little different. They have some similarities, but there's some differences as well. And a lot of it has to do with they're tracing different lines of ancestry for Joseph's parents, basically. There's also some division amongst scholars about how we should understand these two genealogies in terms of whose genealogies are there. Some have said that Luke's genealogy is basically Mary's genealogy, whereas the one we see in Matthew today is Joseph's genealogy. Perhaps that's true, although if you look at the Greek constructions there, it looks like both of them sort of terminate with Joseph, and some scholars think the opposite. Some think that both genealogies are genealogies of Mary. And so there's some arguments about, you know, the best way to understand the differences between Matthew and Luke, but certainly we can say both of them are genealogies of Jesus, and they both have slightly different purposes in terms of their different audiences. Let's now go down to verse 16, which finishes with this: the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary. Now, this line breaks with the pattern that's been set up. Up until now, the genealogy has said, and this person was the father of this person. But now we have the father of Joseph, the husband of Mary, and Mary is the mother of Jesus. So it doesn't actually say that Joseph is the father of Jesus. He's only called the spouse of Mary. So this is setting up the virginal conception story, which Matthew is about to tell as well. Some scholars see here Joseph as a model of God's relationship to men. So just as Joseph is not the biological father of Jesus, but he is his real spiritual father, well, likewise, God is our real spiritual father, even if he's not our biological father. So that's an interesting connection too. Now, in Jewish culture, a child inherited legal kinship rights from their father. So, and this goes into the argument about why Luke and Matthew's genealogies are different. Matthew would be particularly concerned with showing how Jesus has the inheritance rights to the throne of David. And in order for Jesus to have those rights, he has to have a father from the line of David who passes on those legal Davidic kinship rights to him. So Matthew here, by mentioning Joseph, and in fact Joseph as a descendant of David, is showing that by legal adoption, Jesus inherits all of the Davidic rights that Joseph has. So in that culture, if you were adopted into a family or you had a foster father who was considered to be your real father, then all of the legal rights of the father were passed on to you, even if you're not their biological son. So Matthew is making sure that his audience is really clear that Joseph had the Davidic inheritance rights that he could, in fact, pass on to his son. Now, Matthew here does not just present Jesus' name. He includes his title, Christ, Jesus Christ. So again, Matthew is emphasizing this is the long-awaited Messiah. We get to verse 17, and then we have this really interesting summary statement from Matthew. So he's finished the genealogy, and then in verse 17 he says, "The sum of generations is therefore 14 from Abraham to David, 14 from David to the Babylonian deportation, and 14 from the Babylonian deportation to Christ." So Matthew himself tells his readers that he has deliberately organized his chronology, his genealogy, around three groups of 14. And let's talk about why he's done that. So there's 42 generations total, and he's divided up into three groups of 14. So first he says there's 14 generations from Abraham to David. So that would be approximately 1800 BC, that's the time of Abraham, to around 1000 BC, that's the time of David. 14 generations from Abraham to David. Well, there would certainly be more than 14 generations in 800 years. So clearly he's left some people out. So that's the first block of 14. There's 14 individuals, that he has mentioned that cover the time period from Abraham to David. And then there's 14 from David to the Babylonian deportation. So that's 1000 BC to 586 BC. So that's a time frame of only 400 years and a little more than that. And then the third group is from the Babylonian deportation to Christ. So that would be 586 BC up till the birth of Christ, around 3 or 2 BC, depending on how you date it. It's a really interesting verse. What's Matthew doing here? He's got three groups of 14 generations in his genealogy. Why? Well, the Jews placed symbolic value on the number 14. So it appears that Matthew has constructed his genealogy deliberately to conform to a pattern of three groups of 14. There's different theories about what's the significance of 14, but most scholars agree that it has something to do with David, and particularly there's a form of writing or of code words that was in use at the time by the Jews called gematria. So gematria is kind of like a numerical game that the Jews in Jesus' time would play with certain words. And in the gematria system, each letter of the Hebrew alphabet is assigned a number. And the letters in the word David, it turns out, if you take the Hebrew letters for the word David, on the gematria system, they add up to 14. And most Jews would have known this. On top of that, if you look at the genealogy he's constructed, David is the 14th individual who's listed. Really interesting. So by having Jesus arrive at the end of three sets of 14 generations, and by having David as the 14th individual in his list here, it seems that Matthew is really highlighting the role of David and his link to Jesus. Perhaps he's saying something like this: Jesus is the thrice Davidic son of David. That seems to be the kind of the game that Matthew is playing here. Remember, he's writing to Jews, and Jews would be really interested in this gematria sort of stuff. Also in the book of Revelation, if you're interested in these, the gematria and the code words, it appears that in the book of Revelation, when it's the number 666, that appears to be gematria. And in particular, it seems to be from the word Caesar Nero. That translates to 666 on the gematria system. So that's really interesting. So that means Matthew, if this is the right interpretation, it means Matthew has deliberately left out certain generations. He obviously hasn't listed all of the individuals in this family tree or even in this line from Abraham to Jesus. He's obviously left out many of them. He's just using father and son in a looser sense to mean descendant. So the real list, if he was to include all of them, would be a whole lot longer, but he's just using father and son in the sense of descendant. So that's the end of our fascinating text today. I hope you learned something new. Obviously, there's a whole lot more you could say about a lot of the individuals in this genealogy, and you can have a look at that if you dive into some commentaries, but hopefully this gives you a starting point. If you want to hear the next section of text, that is read on December 18th every year. Let's now turn to the Catechism to see what it has to say about this passage, and there's just one brief reference here, which is paragraph 437 about Christ. God called Joseph to take Mary as your wife, for that which is conceived in her is of the Holy Spirit, so that Jesus, who is called Christ, should be born of Joseph's spouse into the messianic lineage of David. So that last part here, the messianic lineage of David, that's clearly what Matthew is trying to highlight in his genealogy. Thanks for listening today. If you found it really interesting, if you think there's others in your life who would benefit from hearing this podcast, please share it with them. This is how we grow the podcast, is if you tell people about it. We rely on your listener support. Thank you so much again, and we'll continue to look at the Gospels in the coming days.